You're listening to Radio MD. She's a chiropractic holistic physician, best-selling author, international speaker, entrepreneur, and talk show host. She's Dr. Suzanne Bennett. It's time now for Wellness for Life Radio. Here's Dr. Suzanne.
Hepatitis C is a contagious liver disease caused by the hepatitis C virus that ranges in severity from a mild illness lasting only a few weeks to a serious lifelong illness that attacks the liver. Now, this viral infection is mainly spread through contact with the blood of an infected person. Hepatitis C infection can be acute, which occurs within the first 6 months of exposure. And to give you just an idea how acute cases there are in the U.S., in 2014, there was an estimate about 30,000, a little plus 30,000 cases of acute hepatitis C virus infections reported in the U.S. Now, hepatitis C infection can also become chronic, which means it's a long-term illness that can last a lifetime and lead to serious liver problems, including cirrhosis, which means it's scarring of the liver, or liver cancer. Now, close to 4 million people in the U.S. have chronic hepatitis C today. Now, we've got today one of the world-leading experts in infectious diseases, particularly in the field of viral hepatitis and HIV. His expertise is sought after globally, included by the Center for Disease Control and Prevention. He's the Director of Infectious Disease Research for Abbott Diagnostics, and is currently working with the Republic of Georgia to help eradicate hepatitis C in the country. Now, let's welcome Dr. Gavin A. Clougherty. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, Dr. Bennett. It's a real pleasure to be here with you.
Now, in the intro, I gave a brief description of what hepatitis C is, aka HCV. Now, can you share with our listeners more about HCV?
Well, HCV is, as you pointed out, an infectious virus that gets, it's a bloodborne pathogen primarily, getting in through dirty syringes or maybe infected blood or semen. So it's very transmissible. It's similar in its route of transmission to HIV. As you pointed out, it really is a virus that can cause significant health problems, but it often takes years, if not decades, for those problems to manifest themselves. So many people are walking around, even in the United States, many people are walking around with a ticking time bomb in their liver, and they don't really know that they have it. And you mentioned, you know, acute infections and about 30,000 reported acute infections. One of the major problems or challenges with hepatitis C is that often it goes undiagnosed, because when you are infected, sometimes you'll have the symptoms like jaundice, nausea, vomiting, etc., but maybe relatively asymptomatic, or these symptoms may be confused with other illnesses. And so I think it's important for people to recognize that there is a risk of exposure or carrying this, and to talk to their healthcare provider about getting tested, you know, so that they understand their infection or not.
You know, you gave us some descriptions on how we can contract it. It is a bloodborne disease, and you mentioned dirty needles and like that. But how about blood transfusions? Because I actually have patients that told me that that's how they actually got it.
Yeah, I think if you were transfused or got an organ transplant before 1992, you'd be considered at a higher risk for hepatitis C, and you should probably talk to your healthcare provider about being tested. Since then, within the United States, the blood supply is screened for HIV and hepatitis B and C, and Abbott actually is very active in that and screens a large number of the units in the U.S.
Got it. So the company you work for actually tests out any of the blood. Let's say that, you know, if we have to go and get surgery, and during surgery, they do need blood. Everything past, you're saying, 1992 has been screened and tested. That's super good to know.
Right.
Because, you know,
it is.
The major
risk groups in the U.S. are, you know, in terms of dirty needles, would be people who inject drugs. Also, baby boomers are considered by the U.S. CDC as a high-risk population that should receive testing at least once in their life. They found that a baby boomer, which is somebody who was born between 1945 and 1965, is roughly, I think, five times more likely to have Hep C than the general population.
Why is that? Why is it the baby boomers? It's not like they're the ones that have more dirty needles and doing drugs and unsafe sex. Why?
Well, I think part of it may be, the whole thing of blood transfusion before 1992. That's one thing. People became more aware of infectious disease and infectious agents more recently. So if you were born between 1945 and 1965, you would have been growing up in the 60s and 70s. There actually was a lot of injecting drug use and drug use in general during that time, and unprotected sex, et cetera. So high-risk behaviors were more prevalent then, I think, in the post-HIV era, where people have gotten a lot more cautious.
Got it. I have a question regarding that, because there are patients, people ask, well, can I get this from kissing? From hugging, because we've got spouses that might actually have it. And I'd like you to help our audience and listeners, telling them that it's not being transmitted through kissing.
No, it's absolutely not transmitted through kissing. It's not transmitted through hugging. The real major risks are unprotected sex, men who have sex with men, sharing needles, and people who inject drugs. If you're getting a tattoo or a piercing, you want to make sure that the place that you're getting that done sterilizes their equipment properly. But once you take those steps, you should be pretty safe.
Oh, that's great. Thank you so much. Now, let's go ahead and go into a little bit deeper about Hep C. I would love to ask you about the most current treatment protocols for it.
Well, it's a very exciting time to be working in the hepatitis C space, as there are many new therapies that have recently come to market from a variety of pharmaceutical companies. And what's really impressive is how is the cure rate. That's defined as a sustained virologic response at 12 weeks after you finish the therapy. So there's many companies that now have effective therapies out there that cure more than 95% of people who successfully complete the treatment. And the drug regimens now have little to no adverse events, so they're very safe and well-tolerated. The duration of treatment is finite. It's an oral, so you take a pill for 12 weeks or sometimes even less, depending on the drug and the patient. And you've got a very, very high chance of ridding this virus from your body.
That's exciting. I'm someone that's in natural medicine, but there are only so much you can do with hepatitis C virus in the most natural way. Prevention, of course, is my favorite way, but I did a little digging and I looked at some of the drugs that were available out there. There's interferon, and that's been around a long time. There's also sulfasbuvir and ribavirin. Those are the two that sound really exciting. And I'm not here to push drugs, but I just want people to know that there are availabilities out there.
Yeah, so interferon was an older drug that had an efficacy, let's say it would cure maybe 30 to 40% of people who received the treatment. The treatment was delivered via injection, and it was a longer term, and the side effect profile was not great. So you'd feel potentially like you had the flu for a few months. So that was a tough one to take. But nowadays, as you pointed out, there's sofosbuvir, which would be Sovaldi, and now there's even more iterations and combination therapies such as Harvoni and Epclusa and other drugs that have come to market that have increased the cure rates and also kept that tolerability, so the patient can take them for a short treatment duration and well tolerated. So this is exciting. And I think, one of the key points that's coming with these new drugs is also that we need to find people to give it to. Because as we mentioned there are so many people out there walking around who don't know they have hepatitis C until that time bomb explodes. So screening and diagnosis is the first step towards treatment and cure. So then I would urge your listeners to talk to their healthcare physicians about hepatitis C, understand their risk, get tested if necessary, so that they can, if they are in fact infected, they can get one of these.
You know, you say something that rarely scientists, doctors say, and the word cure. Dr. Clarity, the fact that you say cure is incredible, because it's very rare and it's difficult to say that. But what I understood when I looked at the studies, and it actually, the viral load goes down to 0%, like there's nothing there. Isn't that correct?
Right. That is correct. You know, the viral load drops to nothing within a couple of weeks of taking these medicines, and, you know, remains negative then. And a cure is defined of undetectable viral load 12 weeks after the end treatment. And so the fact that 95 to 98% or even higher of patients can achieve this, and having that viral load disappear and the virus is no longer circulating in your blood, not only is good news for the patient because it significantly reduces the likelihood of any morbidity or mortality, so them getting sick, but also it removes the risk of them transmitting this virus to their loved ones or to other people in the community. So it's almost like treatment as prevention. You're preventing more infection by getting treated and cured.
That's phenomenal. It's so exciting, such exciting work. And I mean, you know, it's new drugs. So then have they been following these patients who've got basically 100% cured, you know, past it, let's say a year to 2 years, and are they still 100% cure, you know, 0%?
Yes, they routinely, particularly in the context of clinical trials, they'll follow patients for years after treatment, and the cure rates are being maintained. Now, you always have the complicating factor of people who, let's say if you're in people who inject drugs, do they get reinfected or was there a relapse, a late relapse? So the numbers of people cured has been very stable years after treatment.
Right. Great. Good. So good to hear. Now, before I go into more detail about some of the studies, I'd like to know what is the best lab that the general public should ask their doctor to perform? What type of a blood test is it?
Well, you know, I think generally the screening algorithm is defined by the guidelines and by the CDC. So routinely people will be screened, tested for antibodies to hepatitis C, which is the body's response to the presence of the virus. If they test positive for that, it means that the patient has been exposed to the virus. Doesn't necessarily mean that they have a chronic infection, because as you pointed out, 20-25% of patients will spontaneously cure the virus themselves. So we need to differentiate out between the patients who have been exposed to hepatitis C in their lives versus those who are chronically infected and at risk of complications down the road. And to do that, that is generally done with a nucleic acid test or viral load test. So this is the normal algorithm. And I would recommend that in terms of exactly what test, that your patients look for an FDA-approved test for all of their diagnostics.
And is that your company, Abbott, the company you represent, Abbott Diagnostics, mm-hmm. do they actually have an FDA-approved lab test?
Yes, Abbott has an FDA-approved antibody test and an FDA-approved viral load test. Actually, we've got the broadest menu of FDA-approved tests in the space for hepatitis C. We have an antibody to HCV, a viral load test, a genotyping test that can differentiate the strains or the types of virus of hepatitis C virus that a patient may have, and that has some utility in how to treat the patient. And so we have all of the tests necessary, really, to from a diagnostics perspective. We also have a test in Europe, which that is CE marked, which is a core antigen test. It detects a protein, so it's a direct marker of the virus, and it's and the World Health Organization guidelines as an alternate to RNA for confirmation of active infection.
Oh, interesting. But it's not available here in the U.S.?
It's not available in the U.S. as of yet. It is a it has a significant benefit in particularly in low middle income countries where testing and the cost of testing and throughput is a challenge. So to increase access to care in these countries and elsewhere in the world, this test is quite effective.
Wow. Is it the same type of test that you use in the Republic of Georgia? And because I understand that you are very closely working with that country for the hepatitis C elimination program.
Yes. You know, Abbott is bringing to bear all of its diagnostics portfolio for hepatitis C in the Republic of Georgia. And really, our main, one of the main ways that we're working with the government of Georgia, their Centers for Disease Control, the U.S. CDC, is to understand how best to use diagnostics in this kind of environment, particularly in an elimination program, to try and make sure that we can test and treat as many people as possible.
Yeah, I'd love to learn more about that. You know, so when I was digging, and preparing for our interview today, I found a couple of fascinating slides, and it was about the elimination program that you have in Georgia. And what I'd like to know is, you know, and I'm sure the listeners want to know, is why is hepatitis C so high in the Republic of Georgia? It's such a small country.
Right. It is a small country with, I guess, a population of around 3 million people. They have a prevalence of about 5% or 6% of their population that is chronically infected with Hep C. That translates to about, I guess, 150,000 to 200,000 people of their citizens that are chronically infected. And I think the reason, one of the major reasons, they had a significant problem with injecting drug use following the fall of the Soviet Union. So they had some economic difficulties and, things like that. And there was a lot of drug use that drove the epidemic in this country. But the good news is, you know, it's inspiring in a way to see this small country that would fall in the bracket of low and middle income country really tackling this problem head on and saying that they're going to eliminate this from their borders by 2020, you know, defined as, you know, a 90% reduction in Hep C prevalence. So they're really making it a priority at the political level.
Yeah, I was seeing that. I saw, like, you know, images of government officials signing papers and all that. And mm-hmm. and what was also interesting is that it was just in the last 2 years. It's not like it's been going on for a long time. It's so new.
No, they really initiated this in 2015, and I think instrumental in their efforts has been an engagement in what we call public-private partnerships. So they've reached out and are working very closely with Gilead Sciences. They're working with Abbott. They're working with the U.S. CDC and also inside the country with various stakeholders such as patient advocacy, the transfusion, general laboratory medicine, physicians, and really making it a public problem and a public project. So there's a lot of awareness going on. They have run commercials on TV, and they're really, it's a matter of pride for the country, and they're really going for it. So I have to tip my hat to them.
Absolutely. I understand that there are different phases of the treatment and all that, and the drugs are actually for free for them.
Yeah, that's part of the collaboration that they have with Gilead, is that Gilead has provided drugs at no cost for a certain number of patients to try and get this off the ground. But the government is picking up a lot of the other costs associated with it, with treating and managing these patients.
You know, I think this is something to be said about how that the government is so involved. And it is in many, many cities of Georgia that I understand is implemented this program where thousands and thousands of people are involved, a thousand people who are ill with chronic, as even probably acute, are being taken care of in such a great way. I think it's something that Americans in the U.S., we should definitely look at to follow if we have any of these similar type of conditions here in America.
Yeah, I think there's a lot that we can learn from the U.S. or from Georgia. We can learn here in the U.S. from them. One would be the political will. The other is that it's a combined effort of all the stakeholders to really tackle this epidemic. And as we mentioned from the CDC stats, this is a growing epidemic within the U.S. And I think it also serves as a great place to understand and do research. Because one of the key areas that Abbott is involved with them is in understanding how best to deliver diagnostics, how best to find these patients, screen, test, get them treated and cured. And I think it's an excellent opportunity to look at it in real life. And if they can test and they can be successful in a low and middle income country, there's no reason why we couldn't be successful in the U.S.
That's right. You know, one of the things that I'm also, as a natural medicine doctor, it's interested in is how viral infections causes cancer. This is, very true about Hep C. It's a known cause of liver cancer. And there's a lot of other viruses out there that can cause cancer. Why is a viral infection, how is it that it can change the chemistry and the immunity of our cells that can trigger cancer growth?
Well, one of the things to keep in mind is that the virus gets into the body and it infects the liver. The body mounts an immune response. And in the case of the acute infection that's resolved and the body rids itself, in the case of a chronic infection, you have chronic inflammation. So the liver is constantly in a condition of stress and inflammation that leads to scarring and more scarring and scarring again over these decades that then can lead to cancer developing. Also, these viruses do integrate in some manner or form into the human genome. Not in the case of HIV, it has specific genes that allow it to be cut, spliced into your genome and then produce a viable virus from that. But in the case of hepatitis B and hepatitis C, viral fragments do make their way into the host DNA or the patient's DNA, and this can trigger cancer by turning on genes or off genes in the patient.
I study a great deal of viral infections, and I find that it's like a ticking bomb. You don't know when it's going to change your genetic predisposition to disease, but these little critters that you cannot see and you can barely even feel in the beginning, it's amazing how strong they can come into our body and force of nature. And so really the key here is to live a clean and healthy life and eat the best foods so that your genes are its strongest. Isn't that right? Yeah, I mean, I talk about
that is right. I think at Abbott, we're committed to helping people live longer and healthier lives. And I think, even in terms of nutrition, we've got an entire business associated with nutrition. And nutrition is so important even for somebody who has hepatitis C because it's a lipid-associated virus. Lean diets can help even liver health. So anything that would help your liver in terms of diet would also help you if you've got a hepatitis C infection or are recovering from a hepatitis C infection. And then from the diagnostics perspective, we just our goal is to give you accurate, timely information so that you can better manage your health. And then if you know you've got this viral infection, you can tailor your lifestyle to improve your health and also seek treatment to cure, if possible, or manage the infection.
Great. What's great about, talking about what we're doing today, is that there is not a vaccine. There's a vaccine for hepatitis A and there's a vaccine for hepatitis B. Not that I'm a proponent for vaccines because I know a lot of my patients have had vaccine reactions, but it's there. But there is no vaccine for hepatitis C currently. Isn't that right?
No. There is no vaccine for hepatitis C, but the great news and the reason that we can talk about elimination and that the World Health Organization has set aggressive goals for eliminating hepatitis C or viral hepatitis by 2030 is that there are effective treatments. So if we can identify those people who have hepatitis C and they can get these effective short therapies that are well tolerated, you can then reduce any subsequent infections or eliminate any infections, and we can really make a huge difference.
Yeah, I love everything that you're saying. So your company, Abbott.com, that's the website, and that's really where our listeners can talk to their their doctors and get the best form of FDA-approved testing and screening, and if there is a positive, then definitely for the viral load, Abbott, ABBOTT.com. Dr. Clarity, thank you so much. It's been an honor to have you here and give us insight about what's so exciting about how we can eradicate and cure hepatitis C. Maybe one day we will definitely not have the virus at all living in any human beings in the future. Thank you so much. Until next time, go out there and live your best life today, full of energy, enthusiasm, and ultimate health and wellness. This is Dr. Suzanne sharing natural strategies on the Wellness for Life show right here on Radio MD. Stay well.